Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Is an unflushed toilet. Come on in. Welcome to Fly on the Wallin, the show where two bitches who... you wrote this and it's so good. Where two bitches know how to howl at the moon. We're here to share our stories of dating, parenting, and what happens when you record that all for the world to see. Good job. I like these.
I know. I'm going to change it every single week.
So, I think you should.
Yeah. And we also, right before we started... we were sort of having some beef, and so we held hands and we said my favorite lesbian prayer from the Bible. If you've read the Book of Ruth, you know there's like a great lesbian relationship in there. And they say, wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people. Read the Book of Ruth. It is a great queer book of the Bible. So, yes.
That is how you've interpreted it. That's also how I've interpreted it, but I think the masses have not interpreted it as a queer love story, but we like to think of that it is one. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, so we are here today only because of listener support, and more importantly, Patreon support, because with Patreon support, you can sign up for $1, $2 a month, and that allows us to continue doing the things that we like to do. We also have some great content on there that's exclusive for patrons only. The big content on there right now is Amber's, you know, first directorial debut of a docu-comedy called We're Pregnant and Other Lies, so you can go check that out.
And the link to that is in the episode notes. We try our best to keep those episode notes up to date. So you'll see special shout out to Limo, who did our intro and outro song. And also the link to the Patreon is there. And yeah, Ben said it all. So let's jump right into our very first segment, which is called #influenced. It's all about our lives as creators. Quick update. My strike, if you listened to the show last week, you know that one of my ads got a strike for pedophilia and child grooming. My strike has been removed. So in the court of TikTok, I have been exonerated. I'm very happy.
And that's the only court that matters for us TikTokers out here. The court of TikTok.
The court of TikTok and the court of public opinion. I'm on to the next charge. Well, I told you I still got that violation for giving a girl a compliment.
Oh, yeah. What was this?
I feel like I said this last week. Maybe I didn't. But basically, I commented, this girl went on a date with this guy. Like, I think they met on an app or something, and they went on a date. That's what people do. And obviously, she got there, and he was kind of just saying, like, you catfished me. Like, you're bigger than I thought you were. And he's giving her all this advice on how to lose weight, blah, blah, blah. So she just
sounds like a terrible date.
A horrible date. So she came to the internet and was like, y'all, I went on this shitty date today. Like, can I explain? And so in the comments, I wrote, and I quote, what a clown, emoji, clown emoji. You are absolutely stunning. Please don't listen to that bum. Mm. And somebody was flagged for bullying. Because I think, you know, it's basically like AI and stupid stuff at this point. So I think the people thought I was calling the person in the video a clown, which I was not.
Yeah.
But, you know, so that violation expires in 90 days. So what are you going to do? Anyway, I'm good to go. I want to talk for a second.
About charges.
Charges.
I charge you with not zipping your pants.
Yes. I want to talk for a second. I'm not shit talking the internet today. I'm actually going to talk positively about how the internet be having my back. So what am I talking about,
Ben? I need you to
deep
throat that mic a little bit more.
I'm talking in it.
Oh, yeah. Bring it up a little bit more.
We're going to do this right here? Yeah, oh, yeah, okay. Right, that's better.
Yes. Much better. There you go.
Ooh. So should we start from the top?
No. You're good. We have to adjust. Sometimes when you're having sex, you got to find the right position. Sometimes when you're doing a podcast, you got to move the mic.
When were we talking about sex?
I'm just saying there's a good comparison.
And then you just told me to deep throat the microphone. Are you just horny right now?
No.
You should have masturbated before the show.
I've been deep throating the microphone this whole time. It's been right up there.
I'm saying your mind is on sex right now, clearly, right?
A little bit. Yeah. You're looking really great. And then we sort of fought in the car and then we made up. So after like we find connections and then, you know, those are very horny lines, you know, wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you stay, I will stay. Your people be my people. Your God will be my God. I mean, that if that doesn't get you hard, I don't know what will.
Well, I was going to shout out the followers for telling me to zip my pants up in a get ready with me. But I guess we should just have sex on the podcast table right now.
Keep the pants unzipped.
Yeah. Yes.
So talk about followers getting your back. You did get ready with me video. And in the video, your flock.
Don't call them that.
Your flock.
Flock implies flocked. Like they don't have their own thoughts and ideas, I just shepherd them from corner to corner.
Your flock clocked. Your flock clocked that your zipper was unzipped.
They did,
and you didn't see it.
I truly did not see it. I did a quick little get ready with me to go to the screening that we went to the other day, and I came back to like I saw like at least 50 messages on the way to the event that said, zip up your pants, please, zip up your pants.
And so you look down and your
pants. And they were wide the F open.
Thank you, followers.
I actually genuinely wanted to say thank you, followers.
Because I don't have your back that way. Like today,
heck no.
We were shooting a video today and your nip came out and I didn't clock it.
And we couldn't keep that take because my whole nipple was out. And I was like, man, come on. The titties are fully out.
So we have about 5 platforms, you know. We do barely anything on Twitter, but TikTok, Instagram, YouTube. But want you to do more YouTube Reels. So that thing we actually put on our OnlyFans. So make sure you subscribe to our OnlyFans. OnlyFans. Flock to the... No, we don't have OnlyFans yet.
I know. Times ain't that hard yet, but you never know.
You never know.
You never know. But I just wanted to say, like, sometimes your followers don't be trying to be your ops and are out to get you and are out to report you as a pedophile. Sometimes your followers are actually looking out for your best interest.
Yeah.
So I just want to...
And they're making sure your flies are zipped.
Well, yeah. So I just want to say thank you to all of my followers who messaged me that my coochie hairs was showing. Thank you for that.
What the hell is this next thing? It says, husbands don't see on the outline, see creative vision.
Yes. So on the way to the show, on the way to record this podcast, Ben and I got into a fight in the car.
Damn.
And I decided to just go ahead and put it on the docket like you typically do. And this isn't like
a surprise. Like, here, we're going to talk about this. So now you got to talk, because in the car I said, can we put a post-it on this and come back to it later?
Yeah, in the car, Ben said, can we put a pin in? I was like, oh, great. I'll put it
I'll
on
write
the outline.
A whole note on.
I'll put it on the outline for the show. That's the pin. Ben, okay, why don't you, I think it would be really smart for you to describe why you think we're fighting, and then I will try to keep my face as neutral as possible, but this camera is on me, so.
Yes, so we had a disagreement. Amber had a meeting with a creative director. I don't really know what that is. So all I know is that they give you concepts for ideas. And so Amber is trying to build a website and do some photo shoots for like podcasting, hosting, do all this kinds of stuff. So she meets with this creative director and I'm like, okay, questioning, is this the money we should be spending on instead of like spending it on other things like, you know, Wild's trust fund or, you know, saving up for a 540, 520 health fund or college fund for kids. Anyway, so I was just questioning her decision to hire a creative director. And I'm like, are you really that big yet? I was like, you are your own creative director. You don't need one just yet. Amber is...
You do?
So I was like, I was fine with like, you know, hire a photographer, hire, you know, Amber has a great makeup artist who's also a great stand-up comedian. They write together, Jasmine Ellis. So I was like, I'm okay hiring those people, you know, stylists, everything. But I was like, creative director, like you are the creative director, you know? I didn't know why you needed another creative director besides yourself. So I was questioning if that was a good use of money.
I'm done. I think you explained the argument really well. What I struggle with sometimes with you, since we're talking about the influencer life, is sometimes you lack a little vision in the in the arts of aesthetic. Okay.
And sometimes you lack budgeting skills.
That is correct. I won't knock you there. But Ben has to understand, as an actor, as a performer, as a host, and as a person who doesn't want to be doing what I'm doing now, I want to continue to progress. Part of being an actor is literally getting new headshots and new photos, so that when you're called on to do great things, when you're called on to say, like, Amber, we have this billboard we want to put you on, and I'm like, oh, I got a photo ready to go. And what has been happening since we moved to LA, because I haven't taken new photos, is that I'll get tapped to do something.
That's not a hypothetical. That Amber literally was asked to be on a billboard, and she had to send an old picture. So
yes.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So I need...
In Times Square. So for those listeners who don't know, Amber was literally on a billboard in Times Square,
but
you had to send an old, you know, you look a little crusty in that picture, an old crusty photo that was on Times Square. It wasn't your best look.
And you're not even helping your argument right now.
I know, that's the point, is that part of being a mature person is that you realize, like, maybe I should have listened before I started questioning you completely. So I get now having a creative director to sort of guide that thinking, because you're sort of doing a lot. You're like, you know, making videos, and you're mostly you're editing videos, and you're coming up with like new pitch ideas for a more longer documentary. So having a creative director to sort of market you might be a good decision of your budgeting. So I'll move some budgets around. You know, I'll take out some money from Wild's, you know, educational fund.
And here we go.
I'll take some money out of the grocery fund, and we'll fund that. So,
and I get it. There is some element of trying to keep up with the Joneses when it comes to LA. I totally understand that, because, you know, I mean, you and I do feel pressure sometimes, because we're like, oh, we got invited to this event again, so I don't want to repeat an outfit, because I don't want to do whatever. You don't feel that pressure at all. But no. Some of us do, and some of us want to keep evolving with our looks and our style and the photos that we put out there, and yeah. I want like new comedy headshots. So I'm thinking about, like, you know, what kind of like fashionista court jester energy do I want to bring to this photo shoot? And I don't have the resources sometimes, and I don't have the time to plan that out. But did you ever see America's Next Top Model?
I did.
Like, even though the models could model, you need that Jay Manuel,
yeah, that,
to be like, oh,
through.
hit this pose, here's your concept.
And to body shame them a little bit. Yeah, for sure.
You know what? Let's move. Let me know what y'all think about this, because or do you find yourself, it doesn't have to be specific to this conversation, but do you find yourself sometimes having to explain to people who don't see the vision why this vision is important? Because it's really hard for you sometimes to get behind, like, hiring a stylist and pulling different looks and trying to tell a story with my wardrobe or whatever. Like, I know that shit gets on your nerves.
I think any sort of, like, event planning you do with somebody or with a group of people, there's always that one person who says, like, do we really need to spend the money on that? Like, that's the kind of person I am. I'm the naysayer, or at least I want justification. So in those moments, if you're sort of, you know, beefing with someone, something that was that's really helpful is to say, like, ooh, I'm going to put a pin in this. Like, I want to come back to this. And guess what? We came back to it. And I listened to Amber, and I said, you know what, honey? You're right. I shouldn't, you know, I would never call you honey. That's not our dynamic. But I realized that I sort of questioned without you explaining sort of the whole vision first. And I sort of should have just, like, waited and listened. And
I told you, to be fair, I was like, this is going to be a lot. Like, I get 5 looks. So.
Yeah, as soon as Amber started with, you know, this is going to be a lot of money. And I said,
I got to get my hair done. I got to get my nails done. Got to get my makeup done. So, I mean, let's just go ahead and move on to the next things. But I'll make a budget for it. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah, make a budget.
We'll decide, like, this is way too much money to spend on all these things.
We'll try to figure everything out. We'll find that balance, right?
This is a part of being creators.
Yeah, agreed.
I'm going to have you do this at some point. Like, when you finish your book, like, we need to get a stylist. We need to get a photo shoot. Like, are you going to, when you finish your book,
all that.
Because here's the thing about it. Ooh, it just got even more sexy in here. Here's the thing about it. When you finish your book, are you going to want to do all of the things that come with finishing a book? Because it's hiring a publicist.
It's that's the thing together. The photo shoot together. Book, you write a book, I also have to create my own like Instagram account because right now a lot of authors cannot publish a book unless they have some sort of social media presence, and I can't really rely on yours as like to push, you know, to push my book because it's a very different kind of book. I don't know if everybody who would follow you would like the book that I'm writing. Maybe there is some like overlay, but yeah, that's a good point.
I spoke with an author recently, you know, last week I talked about how I'm reading Travell Anderson's book, We See Each Other, which please, please, please read this book, y'all. It is changing my life and changing even the way I think about how I perform gender. Like it's so great for like rethinking things, and learning about Black trans people in media and film. But I was talking to Travell about the book and I asked, because I know how these things go sometimes, I was like, what has been the hardest part for you? Writing the physical book with all of these, you know, they're a culture reporter. And so I was like, oh, you got to have a lot of sources together for this. So what's been harder, like writing the physical book or, you know, doing the book tour, the interviews, the articles, the looks, the photo shoots? And they were saying like, that's way harder. Mm-hmm. Like writing the book is almost the easy part when you talk about all of those things.
Yeah, because when you write a book, you can be alone in a coffee shop. You don't have to interact with people, at least for, you know, the introverts.
Yeah. So are you ready to do all that? Because when you finish this book, I'm ready to go.
You got me ready. You got me ready. I could easily do that part. The hard part is writing the book, at least for now.
And I don't know if when I finished the doc, we were in a position for me to, like, I didn't even know I was supposed to be doing all that. I only recently had a meeting with a publicist. I was like, oh, this is what these people are for, you know?
Mm, yeah.
Oh, well, anyway.
Let's move on to the next conversation, imperfect parenting.
Yes. The doll.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, we have a one-year-old daughter named Wild, and she has been, you know, we go through different trials and tribulations every single week. I think she
had her first nightmare.
Yes.
So usually,
what the hell was that?
Yeah, that was weird. So she woke up crying, and usually when she wakes up crying, it's like, oh, okay, diaper change or something. And she woke up diaper totally fine, she was just terrified. So when I came in, she like hugged me. She like ran up and hugged me.
And it was like, it was that for like 2 minutes straight. Wait, we're holding you. What now?
Yeah. So we
like seizing almost.
Yeah.
So
we cuddled her and, you know, comforted her. But, you know, nightmares are telltale signs of a vivid imagination. So
can babies have nightmares?
I mean, yeah, dogs can have nightmares.
I'm typing this
in
right
now. Babies have nightmares?
I'm just saying.
So that was weird. I was not ready for that. And then I started to realize, like, oh, yeah, when she's 3, 4, 5, she's going to be scared of the dark because she's going to be watching Friday the 13th with me. She's going to be watching, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street at a very young age. Like,
What?
Yeah, she's going to watch all the slasher films at a young age so that she is...
Not if she's already exhibiting signs of night terrors and nightmares.
But they're not real, so, you know, she'll have to work through that trauma. It's sort of like a safe trauma to work through.
But didn't you have night terrors as a
lad? Yeah, vivid imagination right here. And I wish...
Did you enjoy experiencing those night terrors? Why would we further night terror her?
So that then when she's older, she has something to write about.
What, Ben? See, we just... Well, we have a baby together, so we have to compromise, but...
Imperfect parenting. So if you disagree with my parenting style...
Then what? I disagree. So what you gonna do then? No, she could... If she is really...
Anybody know any good therapists? You can...
If she is really into horror, sure. But I don't think forcing a child who's not into horror to sit down and watch something like that when they're young is smart. Because I remember... I might have talked about this on the podcast before, but... Like, my dad's friend, The Sixth Sense, ran out of that film screaming. And then my dad's friend growing up, I guess it was my mom's friend too, like family friends. We would go to their house, and he would put on this, like, tribal mask that was, like, you could not see him at all once he put it on. Like, you just saw the body and the floating head. And it was terrifying. It was he was called Man. That's what they called this, like, horror figure. And like, he would start the dinner with us and he'll be like, I gotta use the bathroom. And then man would come back into the room and and terrify all the kids. For what reason?
I mean, it's a good story.
Anything else, though?
I think learning how to manage terror at a young age is good, right? Because it can sort of prepare you for true terror. So
what? How would if Wild could actually comprehend what you were saying? How would you tell her to manage her night terror?
Or like now?
Correct.
I mean, I would say, well, I would say confront it. So whatever dream you had, was it Freddy? Was it Jason? You know, was it Michael? And then if it's one of those, then we just watch all of them, you know? We watch all 10.
And then what if she wants to, like, go to bed with a knife or something so that she can confront them?
Yeah. Well, we'll make sure the knife is sheathed, at least.
Wow. See. Also something new, moving on, also something new with Wild is her clingy. She's clingy with me.
She's been clingy with me, too.
She's been real clingy with me,
though.
Yeah,
she's been real clingy with me, too.
Ben. You remember the other night where you were like, she actually wants you to bathe her?
Yeah.
Like,
I came down and said, Wild told me that she wants her mom. Actually, she was just screaming and crying, and I was like, I can't. I think I just cooked like 2 meals. I've been cooking a lot of meals lately.
You have been. You've been killing it.
And Wild's been eating all the meals I cook. You've been eating all the meals I cook. It's great. It's a way that we've been budgeting.
It is great.
Cook more has been a huge thing on our list, and it's been very good, but I was just tired. And when I brought her upstairs, she didn't want to leave from use. But eventually I got her upstairs, and I could have washed her, but I was like, I'm in no position to give this child a bath and read to her. Like, I'm just grumpy boots. So I came down and got Amber to do it.
Yeah. But she needed my...
Yeah,
okay,
I think,
here's the thing.
I think she's getting more attached to you. Like, she starts to prefer your bosom than my bosom.
Yeah, you got to get some more fluff up there. What was the thing you were telling me that Brené Brown said about...
Oh, Yeah, there's a viral video that probably all our listeners have seen. And it's basically this idea of telling your partner what percentage of energy you have. Like, I'm rocking a solid 25 or I'm rocking a solid 50. And then your partner says, oh, you know, I can make up that 75% or that whatever. Ideally, this idea of marriage is like everything's 50-50. And Brené Brown is like, that's complete bullshit. Like,
yeah.
No marriage is ever 50-50. Some people have 20. Some people have 80. And the idea is to make it to 100. And she says there are times when both of us have 10 or 20. And then at that point, you have to sit down and you have to come to some sort of management. You have to come sort of like crisis management to deal with the fact that both of you together don't have 100. So what do? So we both sort of rest, or we order out tonight, or we do something to make sure that the percentage that we don't have can sort of be accommodated by planning. So... I love that.
I resonate with that so hard. I feel like we've been doing a version of that. Like, obviously, we haven't been quantifying it. But I think you specifically are very good at reading when I'm at a solid 15 and being like, let me get you some food. Go lay down for 30 minutes. I'm taking your phone. And I think... You know, what's interesting is obviously we on the internet, I guess we have this sort of facade a little bit that, not facade, but we're kind of more elevated versions of ourselves. And because I am the editor and filmer of everything, it gives the appearance that we kind of have like a Miss Piggy Kermit dynamic. Mm. Because, of course, when I'm at 15, I'm not recording. And I guess maybe I should record when I'm at 15 and then you come in with that
high
85
energy. Yeah, that high energy, like I can be the Miss Piggy to your Kermit, you know?
yeah which you have been, but in the times where I'm a little bit like lacking,
then you don't want to record anything.
I'm out of gas, and I think that obviously skews the perception. But thanks for being my...
When you have a kid, you have to do that.
You
because
have
someone
to.
Has to be 100% for the kid.
Yeah.
Right? So you sort of have to make up something.
You do it.
Yeah, you
just
do
kidding.
It.
Why don't you like... do it? yeah. But we're getting there. And what I don't know. I would love to hear from parents out there if your young child skews towards one parent or another. How do you combat that when, you know, if you're at a 15, but the child skews towards you, what do you do for that? Because Ben is so good at swooping in and taking Wild out.
Pretty good at that.
Yes, you're super good.
Like, I'm going to come in and take her from you. I literally say, all right.
Yeah. You're like, give me her.
Yeah. Or Amber will be gone for a whole day. And I said, I need to like go upstairs and read a book. I can't be around this child anymore.
Right.
It's amazing that we have that level of communication, because I know there are lots of households where the responsibility of the child is put on completely on one parent, you know? And that's sort of.
That is insane.
That's hard. And then some households, they don't have that luxury of two parents.
Yeah.
Or
both are insane.
Yeah. Like, or this idea that people literally you're both at work, so you both come home at the same time and you're just both exhausted. What do? Right. You can't hire a nanny because that's expensive. Not everyone has that luxury. And so there's a lot of ability that we have, both like a economic ability, but then also just a relationship ability, that we're able to figure out this, and that a lot of our fights or like disagreements come down not to like a kid, how we raise our kid, but through like creative disagreements. Like we disagree on, you know, what
cussing.
Content we want to post or something like
right.
that.
Right. And the cussing.
Yeah, I've been cursing. Yeah.
Well, you've always cursed. I curse too, but it's so hard because now she's picking up every single word.
Especially
that I'm like,
shit. So the sound, she's starting to mimic the sound. So when I say shit, that's something. These words of like shit, you know.
Yeah,
that's
and an I'm looking at Ben like, stop.
Yeah.
Like my head has spun in a full 360.
It won't be her first word though, right? Like fuck, shit, damn.
No, I don't think that's cute at all. I hate
they,
when kids
they won't
be
their
cussing.
First words.
I know.
She says other words now.
I'm aware, but I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them. Like when
green.
Because people think that's funny. Like when it's like, look at my little badass niece cussing up a storm.
Yeah,
like that's not funny.
The Will Ferrell skit that he did with his kid when we were in high school, where his kid is the landlord.
Right. But even that, I remember her being like, I want my money or something.
Bitch. But she says bitch. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not cute to me.
Yeah. That video got a lot of people talking about parenting and Will Ferrell's
ability. I wouldn't go in a full discourse about his parenting ability. Like, and if your kid cusses, like, I'm not going to be like, well, you shouldn't be a parent. That's not how I feel, but it's not like, I don't know. Like, teaching your child how to say a bad word and then posting that is cringy. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't think it's cringy?
No, I think it's hilarious. I love
when
kids curse.
You love when kids curse?
Yeah, not when I was a teacher. But now I'm like, yeah, not my problem anymore.
Oh, my God. But you don't think there's a little bit of, like, it's a metaphor for, like, an adult just manipulated this child for their humor?
Yeah, but all, even gender expression is that, right? You put a cute dress on a kid, and that parent has just manipulated that kid's gender for their own benefit, right? That kid doesn't care if they're wearing a dress or jeans, right? So we do that all the time.
You're pushing me to think about it.
So here's what I don't think is okay. And I told this to my students when I was a teacher, is that if you drop a stapler on your foot, or you do something, you say, shit, that doesn't bother me. You turn to the person next to you, you call them you call them dumb, right? You use a word that a two-year-old uses. It's like, oh, that's dumb. That is something that I would correct and redirect.
So you're more concerned about how Wild will cuss versus if she's cussing at
all.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it's a disrespect thing for sure. Like, I think this is when we come down to like a fundamental difference in like how we were raised.
Yeah.
For like racially,
no, we were raised regionally. The same. We were raised the same way.
But you be cussing around your parents, and I'm always like, "This is weird." Like,
so,
no.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I think the idea that a word in and of itself, without context, has this like magical meaning is grounded in paranoia and grounded into magical thinking, right? So this idea that I say fuck or shit, and this word by itself has some sort of greater weight than words like dumb, stupid, whatever.
Word weight.
Word weight, right? I think his idea that people believe that words have a magical power, that curses are real, right?
We even yeah, but use words the word do curse. Matter, though.
They do within context.
Yeah.
And so without context, a word is just a word.
But sometimes it's like, but the context of this is like, you're a kid, you can learn so many positive words in the correct context. And in that context, he did teach his child to say bad words for
Will
a video.
Ferrell.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the money part was cute.
Yeah, where's my money?
Or, and, like it didn't mean the video
she
for
was
me
pretending
was
pretending to be drunk as well, so
that's kind of funny. But it didn't mean that the whole video isn't funny.
Yeah.
Like I'm not gonna be that kind of comedian. I could be like, this is funny, I don't know about this, but this is funny. Like
yeah. It all depends. It all depends. Context is everything.
But you don't think it's hard for a kid to sort of decide, like, okay, I'm learning new words, and this one's bad, and that one's good, and this one's bad. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and it's also hard for a kid to understand that running out in the street is wrong, right? So you still teach them that.
Yes. But I feel like all of this is wrapped up in, like, I don't want to change the way I talk. I don't want to change the way I navigate the space, so she'll figure it out.
Yeah, I think that's a balance between me justifying my actions.
Correct.
And me actually trying to teach Wild things.
Yes.
I just still want to say the word shit.
Yeah.
At the end of the
day. But even you could find other words to say, though. Slit.
I could.
But you won't. So you don't want to do the work, so she got to do the work.
No, I'll do the work with her.
I like that. Let's leave it there. Because that's good. That's a commitment to
doing this. All right. Do's and don'ts of marriage, of relationships, everything. So this is the part of the show where Amber and I read, you know, your DMs, your letters, reviews. Also, you make sure that you post a podcast review that really helps people discover our show.
Yes.
And you can write questions in there as well. So do's and don'ts. You want to go ahead and read this first DM that you received?
Dear Amber and Ben, I'm in need of dating advice. Well, maybe should I say this person's name? Maybe they're shopping around. I guess I'll say their name. They said it right here. I'm Robin. I'm a single mom from Chicago. I've been single since 2017 after a difficult relationship with a narcissistic person. I've tried dating. However, I have kidney disease along with other health-related issues, and unfortunately, I'm no longer able to work. I am always open and honest with someone I'm interested in when they ask about my work. Once I tell them, I typically get ghosted, or they say they're no longer interested. Recently, it's gotten to the point where men have said I'm broken or damaged, that no one will date me because of this. At this point, I'm ready to give up and just accept that I'm meant to be alone. Love just isn't in the books for me. What should I do? You want to start?
Wow.
I know.
That makes me really sad because, like, love is for everyone.
Literally.
There is somebody out there for you. And
I want to start by saying, like, if anybody tells you that you're broken or damaged, they're likely broken or damaged. Like, that is not okay to accept, no matter what your circumstances, no matter what health issues you have. Like, it's just ableism.
Yeah, it sounds it sounds at this point that this person's like emotional well-being has just been so attacked and beaten down, and that they really need to like surround themselves with like friends and family and therapy to sort of build back up that confidence, because it sounds like this person has lost all confidence in themselves. And that's really hard to do, to go into dating without confidence, right? And knowing that you're a bad bitch, because when you interact with people, you're going to date and go on really shitty dates. You're going to have really awful interactions. And if you allow someone to get in your head like that, then it's going to be really hard for you to have discernment of who is worthy of your time or not. So I would say maybe like, I don't think that's true. It sounds like your confidence has sort of been beaten down by others, so you need to build up that confidence.
Yeah, especially because you led with the fact that you were in a relationship with a narcissistic person,
yeah,
and
that's
typically
hard to recover.
Yes, because typically that narcissist is probably getting into your psyche and saying things like, well, what would you do without me? Like, I'm the only one's going to put up with your health issues. Like, you didn't say that he said those things, but I'm sure that some of those things were said. And so I think that it's super important, like Ben said, to just do some self-work, because I hate telling people, like, just find them on the apps. They're on the apps. But I'm never one of those people just saying, just get on the apps just because. Like, I met the love of my life and my greatest friend on an app. So,
but you also met bad people on the app.
I met bad people on the app as well. But I'm just saying, like, I think people sometimes, like, it's so cliche now to say, like, just hop on the apps and things like that. But I think as far from an accessibility standpoint, it's a little bit easier to meet people online and get to know them and work your way up if there are some physical restrictions here. But I definitely would highly recommend what Ben said and just do a little bit of self-work and some therapy.
Don't give up on yourself.
No, yeah. I didn't say that.
Yeah,
No.
I'm just saying, like, it sounds like you are not destined to be alone. There's no destiny.
Yeah, I 100% disagree with that.
That's complete bullshit. When people are like, yeah, I'm destined. I guess I'm destined. No, absolutely. First, get that thought completely out of your head that's been pounded in there by really shitty men.
Yes.
And there are good men out there, I think.
Well, you know, I think that, let's get back to the letter.
There are great dudes out there, great men who are caring, and you just, for now, like, maybe give it a rest. Like, work on yourself.
I would also, one of the best questions I was ever asked relationship-wise was, what are the things that you love about yourself that you see in your partner? Hmm. And so I think, you know, I'm speculating, but if I were to meet you in person, I would ask you, even if you're not dating yet, mm-hmm. like, what are the things that you love about yourself that you are shopping for in a new partner?
Oh, yeah.
And if I'm getting an answer like, well, there's nothing to love about me, but I have all these health issues, but I'm not. That's when it's like, okay, we might not even be in a position to be dating right now, because you cannot date when you're not in love with yourself and confident with yourself and happy with yourself and thinking you're...
What does RuPaul say?
If you can't love yourself, how you like my RuPaul?
Yeah, that was great.
How in the hell are you going to love somebody else? Can I get an amen up in here?
Yeah.
That was a bad RuPaul.
Yeah.
It wasn't. She already done had hers. That's a pretty good one. Anyway, I would ask you my number one question, and I actually want you to message this back to me. What are the things that you love about yourself? That you love about yourself that you would want in a partner?
Yeah.
Ben, what are the things that you love about yourself that you see in me?
I'm a reader. You know, I'm thoughtful.
And you see that in me?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like to eat great food.
That's two.
I see that in you. You are a reader, and you're willing, you're open-minded. You're very open-minded.
And you see that in yourself?
Yes. I think both of us are very open-minded.
Okay, I'll give you three. I love somebody who can laugh at life and find the humor in everything, so you're
probably
definitely
a little bit
that
too
person.
Much. I find humor in too many things.
No, but I mean, there's always something funny about the something. Or here's one. I want to become a more patient person, and I see that in you.
Yeah.
And so in my pursuit to be more patient, I needed you in my life. And I love about myself that you can stick me in any room in America, and I will find a way to connect with people, and I so see that in you. You are so
put me in any
like the
room
first cookout I brought you to. I was like, he's not even a little bit uncomfortable. Like,
yeah, or like, put
and
me
if
in
I
any
asked
room,
him to leave to not compromise the space because of his whiteness, he would be like, that makes sense. Yeah. I'm out of here.
Put me in any room in America, and I will be talking with someone.
Yeah.
Who's a science fiction nerd. I will find the nerd.
You can take
room.
Me to a Klan meeting and I'd be like, all right, let me see how I'm going to work this room.
Jesus Christ.
Okay. But I want you to report back to me this listener, I put those two together. Report back to me on what you love about yourself that you are shopping for in a new partner. Letter number two. You ready, Ben? This is a quick one. This is a quick letter. Dear Amber and Ben, We've been together 3 years, looking to move in together next month. I love him dearly. He says he loves me the same. Issue? His attitude. He's short-tempered. And sometimes I get the brunt of the bullshit. When we're good, it's amazing. When it's bad, it hurts real bad. I'm a little sensitive to meanness. I don't want to be sad living together. Any advice is greatly appreciated. Love you, girl.
So the first thing, when anybody has a short temper and they don't know they got a short temper, that is not someone I want to be around with, right? Like, you have to have that metacognition of, like, I have a short temper. I know this thing is going to make me mad, so I need to, like, remove myself from the situation. And so I would first ask, like, you know, does he know that he has a short temper? Does he know it's something he needs to work on? And if he says, if those are no's for both, like, pass.
Pass on moving in together, pass or pass on the relationship?
In, pass on moving in until this person figures it out, because that short temper when you move in is going to be a lot shorter, because you're not going to be able to remove yourself from the situation anymore.
Yeah, once, like, they live together.
Yeah, once you live together.
Yeah, I would really, I know y'all are moving in together next month, but I would postpone, if I'm being honest. Because if you're feeling like this before moving in, it's like Ben said, you're going to feel really trapped. I think if you're dealing with somebody with a temper and they're not willing to even consider or not willing to try some new strategies, because Ben has taught me, and I wouldn't even consider myself somebody with a short temper. It's just,
I,
like,
wouldn't either.
You would, okay?
It's
good.
Shorter,
I was like,
it's shorter
don't.
Than mine. It's shorter. It's way shorter than mine. But I don't really have a whole. I mean, I do get angry at points.
Of course, yeah.
But I tend to, you know, I'm like, okay, like, let's try to figure this out. Let's, you know.
Yeah, yeah, you're really great with problem solving and stuff. And I think, and back me up here, I think I'm really great with being mad and then resetting quickly.
Yeah, you're pretty good. You're pretty good at that.
Like I can't be mad more than an hour.
You have a short temper, but your temper is also short.
Correct. But I also think you have taught me some really key things about basically, like, when this temper happens, here's what you're not going to do. Like, you've taught me a lot of those things,
yeah,
that even through the red glare, the red lens that I see, like, when I'm seeing red, I still have the wherewithal to remember the things that you've said.
Yeah.
One of the best things you've ever told me, I've probably said this on the podcast before, but one of the best things that you ever told me was that when I get very upset, I have a tendency to say never and always.
Mm, yeah.
You never take out the trash. You always make us late to events. And you were like, I'm going to call into question how many times that has been untrue. So
yeah,
you taught me early on, you're like, you have to take never and always out of your vocabulary.
Mm.
It's not true. It's not helpful. It's completely disrespectful. I did something in this, I might have done this a couple of times, but that doesn't mean I've never done right, or that doesn't mean I always F up.
Only a Sith deals in absolutes. It's a line from Star Wars. Sith are like the villains. So, yeah.
Were you telling the listeners that, or me?
Yeah, you.
A little bit of both.
Yeah. A little bit of both.
I know what a Sith is. I've been with you long enough. But I'm saying, so even in my anger, I can still remember the things that Ben has talked about, so I won't take it there. So if y'all are like, no, we're committed to moving in next month, I would highly recommend the next time. And also, like, how often is this person getting angry? Is it, like, daily?
Yeah. That's a great question for this person to ask.
Because daily is wild.
Yeah.
And I just, because, you know, I love my family, but I kind of grew up in a household like this. Like, my dad has a pretty short temper, and my mom spends a lot of time managing his temper, I think more time than she thinks she does, to the point that we're now, it's just like, he's gotten a lot better since we were kids, but I think my mom truly underestimates sometimes, like, do you know how much of your life was spent, like, de-escalating and disarming our dad over the smallest things? Like, it would be like, I left my jacket at school, and dad's like, get there! It's like, I'm seven. Seven-year-olds leave jackets,
yeah,
at school, or whatever it 33 is.
33-year-olds leave jackets at school.
Yes. And so I can tell you, as a person who was, like, raised in this environment,
yeah,
you get to a point where you're like, I'm not even going to tell my dad, because I know he's going to flip out. So if something goes wrong, I'm going to tell my mama. If she want to tell him, cool. If not, like, he's just going to kind of be in the dark about it. But one day if y'all want to have a family or whatever, like, do you want your dynamic to be like you always managing your partner's emotions? Like, that is a lot.
Yeah. You also need a plan for these kinds, because I sometimes see you at points having a short temper, not in general, but at points.
Of course.
And then you have to have some sort of plan. And so Amber's plan has been like separation. So we'll if it's a temper revolving around sort of a disagreement, we're not going to have that conversation when you're angry, right? We're going to come back to that. The other thing is, you know, okay, did you go to yoga today? Okay, great. Did you, you know, or
you're
like
so good at that.
A big thing that Amber discovered is that Amber would lose her temper when she drank coffee or alcohol. And so she's cut both of those things pretty significantly out. Like occasionally she'll drink coffee, but, you know, alcohol would put you in a mood. Coffee would put you in a mood of like high anxiety, and that would just create a short temper. So like knowing, creating plans if you're going to move ahead with this person
to limit
or just like when this person loses their temper, what are you going to do? What are they going to do? And sort of sit down, have that conversation. But if this person's not willing to even have that, or if this person's not even aware that they have a short temper, like, yeah, turn away, get out.
Because even you, I mean, I like that you kept this letter short and sweet, but I get the brunt of the bullshit is a very, like, that could cover so many things. Yeah. Like, what is the brunt of, like, and how long do you bear the brunt of the bullshit?
You know what, in these situations, I always tell the people, like, what do your friends think? Right? So if we meet somebody, they talk about relationship woes, I'm always like, yeah, what does your friends think about this? What do your friends think about you getting back with this person or whatever?
Or has, and this would be a great question to ask yourself, has my partner's temper affected those relationships?
Like other than between the two of you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because in thinking about my own childhood, hell yeah. My dad has pissed off so many other friends of my mom's or whatever. Not like so many, but enough to the point where it's like you showed your ass not only to the family, but to other people outside of it. So at what point is it like, is this something we could sort of deal with at home, or is this like, yo? And I would say, like, even for you, Ben, like, you don't have a temper, but you can get a little drunk sometimes and say something that will fire somebody else's temper off, and then I'm like,
yeah.
Well, there goes the holiday.
If you have a short temper, I'm gonna find you. I'm gonna find you and set it off.
Yes, you're such a contrarian.
I'm the match to your fuse. I love seeing people's temper go out of control. It's definitely one of my toxic traits for sure.
It is.
I love pushing people's buttons.
You like making people feel uncomfortable.
I love it.
You
God, it turns me on.
And I've had to tell Ben, like, you just hijacked the whole room, like without everybody.
I think it's hilarious.
It's not hilarious
and
because people didn't ask to be put in this uncomfortable. Like, we're at a party.
Well,
like,
part of me being a teacher is to force people to be on.
Yeah,
listen,
but I'm not. I didn't sign up for your class, though.
If you are in the same space as me, you're in my motherfucking classroom.
No, that is so white and male of you.
Yeah, it is.
Is that something you want to work on?
No, 100%. Okay. It's my toxic
trait. Well, because you sound proud.
It's my toxic
trait. You are? Yeah.
It's my toxic trait that I need to. I'd be like, oh, wait, tone it back a little bit.
Yeah, but you were just claiming it.
It is my toxic. I know,
but you were just repping it like, and if you come up in my classroom, bitch, I'm going to put you in the corner with a dog scare, bitch. That's what you just did. It's like, whoa.
I'm being funny, but it is true. I will say things because I like an intense conversation.
Yeah.
But
because Ben hates small talk.
Oh, God, it's the worst. But I like intense conversations, disagreeing with someone, and then at the end of it being like, oh, man, you're still my homie. You're still like my friend or whatever. And not everybody can sort of.
Yeah, but you will go up to somebody and talk about.
And not everyone can distance themselves from a heady conversation, right? And I was sort of trained that all conversation should not be taken personally. It's sort of like the academic part of me that this is just a presentation, which is absurd. Like all academia is very personal, but I think academics sort of create this facade that this is not personal. This is just academia, and sort of trying to be more aware of that and how pride sneaks into that as well, for sure.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between a heady conversation and walking up to someone and challenging like what they fundamentally believe. Like,
Yeah, I guess when I do those kinds of things, and I know what you're talking about, is that someone will assume that I believe what they believe. So they'll make a comment or they'll say something that I find as an entryway.
I'm not even just talking about strangers. I'm talking like you will go up to someone that you know and you love with pretty clear religious beliefs, and then you'll just unprompted make a comment on their religious belief. They didn't ask.
It's never unprompted.
It is.
There's a
You need to take the advice of this person that you gave this person about, like, but does your person know they have a temper? You be unprompted people sometimes. I've watched you do it. I've watched somebody not talk about religion, and then you bring that up because you know about that.
So that's so funny that you think that, because what will happen is that this person will say something very, like, minute, right? So they'll be like, you know, a perfect example is someone will get into a car accident, and this person's car is destroyed, they're okay. And someone hypothetically will say, oh, thank God that they're okay. And I was like, well, if God really cared, he wouldn't have gotten this person to a car accident.
Yeah, but it's just, but you know, colloquial phrases,
right,
and
exactly.
People's beliefs. It's like, this is not the time to yeah. Like, you know what it does? It almost like centers you and makes it about you now, because it's like, well, let me sneak a joke in here about this person's car accident. And it's just kind of like,
it my toxic trade.
Yeah.
It's something that I'm working on, and it's something that I don't like working on, but I see the value of working on it, because the sacrifice of a relationship to like make myself feel smarter than someone or more superior to them is just not worth it. You know, like making comments
good.
Like
this
that
is good. This is progress.
Is like, it's such a power play.
It is a power play. It's not even that you think like it's. It's not even that you care to sway this person's opinion about what they believe. Yeah. It's just a power play.
Well, I think it's not one or the other. There's no absolute here. Part of me would love to sway this person's opinion. Part of me feels good about calling out their language. I believe language is important. And then part of me
So now you believe language is important.
Yeah.
Let's rewind
context.
To the top of the podcast.
Yeah, language is important.
When it's like, it's just like, I said
who context cares? Within, language within context is important. So,
but it's just words.
Within context, right? The context is a car accident. So the language you're using is assuming that car accidents are divinely appointed by some person.
Okay. Here's what we'll do. The next time this happens and you bring it up unprompted, I will call attention to it. Because you will do these. You'll be like, deep throat that mic. And now I want to have sex. And I'm like, so now you're unprompted having a sex talk. And I didn't even prompt this conversation.
Well, we did say a lesbian prayer at the beginning of the
But podcast. You interpreted it as that.
No, it's there in the Bible.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, like, you think somebody else said the words, but you said the words.
No, remember we held hands at the beginning of the podcast
and you brought
it up.
No, I did it. You brought up the hand holding too. Tape back.
No. But at the beginning, before we even started recording,
right?
You wanted to do something special, and so we sort of like quoted that verse together.
Yep.
And then I brought it up.
You brought it up on the show
because it sort of
you called it a lesbian queer romance.
Naturally, just happened.
Then you,
I was just
told me to
deep
throw the mic. Then you said something else about sex. I wanna say that you brought up all those things.
You were the one that didn't have the mic closer to you, so I was trying to make
a joke. And the only way to tell me to get the mic close is to tell me to deep throat it.
Well, I needed
because
to make
I'm a
joke.
Woman, and you can't. You can't make a joke about a woman without.
I've been deep
sex.
Throating the mic longer than you. That's a joke about me.
Got it. We should read it.
We're
just
done.
Saying, sometimes you think somebody else brought up the minute thing, but you brought up the minute thing and made the minute thing a big old titty thing.
My synapses heard something and I made some wacky connections.
Yeah, you did. And so, or sometimes you'll you do that thing. You're like, you'll say a joke and you're like, God, that's so good. And I'm like, it's just a joke that I said earlier that you repeated, but go off.
Well,
like,
yeah,
thinking
because
that you made it up.
No. I don't think I made it up.
Yes, you do.
Maybe I do. Sometimes the jokes I make, I don't realize I make. Sometimes
let me tell you. Let me give you a bar for it. If it's funny, I probably said it.
All right. I disagree. All right. So we, the next section of our show is called Shelfie, where we talk about what we watched, what we're reading. I'll go first.
Yeah, go for it.
So I'm reading a classic science fiction novel, 1970, written over 50 years ago.
Okay.
Called Ringworld, guy by Larry
Ringworm.
Ringworld. Ringworm. Ringworld. Ringworm is what cats get. Actually, my bunny got...
Adults be getting them too, or like
really?
Kids.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
One time I had a rabbit who had this big, like, worm
you know
in
what?
His testicles.
Let's go. What's the book about? Was, what's the book ooh. About? Oh, please
yeah,
tell me what
Snuggles,
the book is about.
Man. R.I.P. Love him.
To his balls?
Yeah. Well, he died. He got killed. I think I've said this before, but he was killed by a golden retriever because my dad let him run around. My dad actually killed a bunch. I think I've said this, killed both a hamster, responsible for the death of my hamster, and my rabbit. So, good job, Dad. Love you. Anyway.
Dang.
So, Ringworld. Okay, so classic science fiction novels, the field was so male-dominated that a lot of it, when you go back, you'll read, like, you know, Ray Bradbury, and there's all this cool shit on Mars, and mm-hmm. then the women are just housewives on Mars, like working in the kitchen. You're like, okay, great thought process, but as far as technology, but zero sociological, like, you know, boundaries, boundary pushing. Except Larry Niven writes this book, 1970, and in there, there's a human, Louis, who meets this alien, and Louis at one point is like, I don't really understand your pronouns. They're really bothering me. And the alien at one point is like, well, you know, too bad. It's not for you to know. It's just for you to accept.
Yeah.
And it's just, I thought, I came across that line. I was listening to the audiobook, because audiobooks are books. And that just struck me as just very progressive. And
for 1970.
Yeah, 1970 yeah. still holds up. To be fair, 2 years before, Ursula Le Guin writes a book called The Left Hand of Darkness that literally it's about a race that's trans and sort of push the boundary of like gender bending. Great book. Everyone should read it. And I think Larry Niven for sure read that book. And I think when he writes about this alien species, I can see that influence a little bit. But still, him accepting that, writing about it, I thought was like very progressive. And that's been a really great read. It's fun to go back to read these books because you'll read like a Philip K. Dick book and you're like, oh man, thoughts on reality. And then the women there have like one line. You're like, oh damn.
Yeah. It's like, and this is who's more way more praised than who was this person?
Larry Niven. Yeah. He's still kicking it. He's doing well. Ringworld is
still kicking.
Yeah, he's still Ringworld is about to be turned into an Amazon series. I'm excited.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
It was also the audiobook. I read a recent review of the book, and in the review, the writer was saying that the book doesn't feel like the characters are fully fleshed out. It seems more of like a thought. A thought book where you have a cool idea and you sort of talk about the idea, not necessarily the characters. But with the audiobook, because the guy does different voices,
yes.
it brings more characterization to the characters.
It does.
So then I associate elements of the characters that are not explicitly stated in the book, but because of the audiobook, it's brought alive and there's more characterization. So I thought that was a really interesting experience where an audiobook can actually influence your, you know, experience with the book. Hardcore.
That's always been my experience. Like, what even we were just doing the side by side, I'm like, ooh, I love this being read in the accent of,
yeah,
you know, like if this is a book that is supposed to be in Nigeria, I love that I'm hearing it from a Nigerian voice. Or I was reading a book based in France and one in Scotland, and those actors matched the nationality of, you know, so the book, and it enhanced it because you're like, I wouldn't have pronounced this the same way, or like, oh, I can tell by the dialogue here that like dialogue and voice is so important, and just the way they do different character work as well. That's what I'm loving about We See Each Other as well. I'm reading the book and listening to Travelle read it, and just all of those like little southern quips that we say and stuff.
Not
just
every
so
author
funny.
Does their
right.
own audiobook.
That's
sort
correct.
Of rare.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, it's more rare for
yeah.
So,
but when some do it, it's so powerful. Like I remember when I read Beloved, I always do the audiobook and the book side by side.
Yeah.
When I read Beloved, I was listening to Toni Morrison's voice, wow, and it just brought her back to life.
Yeah, that must have
been
a lot of
ways.
Like, Angela's Ashes. I remember reading that book, yep. And it was written. I know for sure the author read his own book.
Yeah, so it's like you're getting like Frank rich McCork, yeah. Irish accent.
Yeah,
I love. So, like I said, I'm reading.
But then there are certain authors who probably should not read their book.
Absolutely not. Yes. Yes. but I'm, like I said, I'm reading We See Each Other by Travell Anderson. Cannot praise this book enough. It is changing everything. And we watched Wong Fu.
Yeah,
Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar. So good.
Yeah, that
I was
movie
like,
still
Ben,
holds
Halloween
up.
Costume? Yeah, it still holds up. I definitely think there are, it's a very great movie to analyze when it talks about gender and gender performance and stuff like that, because these were, you know, three drag queens, but they almost performed. No, I don't want to say perform. They almost lived as trans women.
Yes.
Because
they
like
never...
drag queens don't typically like take the makeup off and live there. Yeah.
They keep their drag on the show the whole time.
They do. They
so
do.
It's really a trans story. And
yes.
I think that's
yes.
what Travell Anderson was writing about in the
Correct.
Book.
Right. Right.
And I think when you're so starved for like your representation, you're able, you see something, you sort of collapse onto that as like
yes.
as a queer icon. Like, for example, The Little Mermaid, right?
Right.
Ursula becomes this queer icon because
yes.
you're so starved for that. And so I think it's appropriate to see that movie as a trans story in many ways.
Yes. But one thing Travell is teaching me in the book is, you know how people ask, like, people have asked the question in the past, like, when did you first see yourself in film or media or whatever? And Travell talks about, like, that's not the question to ask. The question to ask is more so like what depiction held you the most and for how long? Because they talk about, like, I can see a depiction of something and they held me up until this point or
yeah.
but this is the depiction that held me the longest. I don't know if I'm so I remember feeling that way with, like, Awkward Black Girl, right? I was like, oh, here is, you know, a brown skin, darker skin, black person, mid-size, with a shaved head, who's funny, who's awkward. And this held me during my college experience up until, you know, the scene where this happened or whatever. So
the argument to be made is that yourself is a constantly changing self.
Yes, yes.
And so we never actually see ourselves in a
completely,
mirror.
Wholly.
Completely.
Yes.
Especially in film.
Yes.
I'm curious, though, with, like, Instagram and social media, because the self and the content is less boundary-defying, right? So when you make a film, there's an actor playing a character that's, you know, produced, and it's all, you know, for the most part, it's narrative, it's fiction. Or social media, you have people who've not had platforms who are able to show themselves more directly, but
yeah.
also
enter us, yeah,
yeah, enter
which is,
us,
which people do. I've had people like, I thought she was funny until this unfollow, which is totally fair.
Or they'll say, I really see myself in
yes,
in
yes.
you, Amber.
Right,
in
it's like, well, this. Yes, you see a depiction of me that is holding you through motherhood, that is holding you through marriage,
yeah.
but you
Even
might not be able
will
to
say
get...
I'm the Amber in this situation.
Yes, yes,
yeah.
But
or you'll say that, yeah.
I'll say I'm the Amber in the situation.
You'll say, oh, I'm the person, I'm the blank in this situation.
Oh, in other
yeah.
people's stuff. Oh, got it. I was like,
yeah.
well, of course
we'll
I'm the Amber in our
that.
Shit. Yeah, I got you. Yes, we see that all the time, and that's important. But it's also important to note that, like, you will never fully see yourself in what we do, just as I will never fully see myself in what, you know. I don't know.
So what you're getting into is
depressing.
My favorite thing about academia. Like, Travell Anderson is very much an academic in
oh,
the
for
way
sure.
that they approach these films and the way they analyze these films. And so when you change the language of, like, you know, what depiction held you the longest from, you know, when did you first see yourself? People might be like, you're mincing words. And you're like, well, no, I'm not. It's this idea that there is no self that I can fully see on
right.
the screen.
But it does show me, this is what they talk about in the book, it does show me what is possible and yeah. what is within the imagination. So I think also therein lies the other side where people are always like, well, don't show your kid a gay this because then they're going to be gay, like, which is a falsehood. But there is this idea of like, no, you're afraid that this might show them what's possible, that that they actually might see this and learn like, well, no, I'm not a trans woman, but I have been thinking about how the gender that I was assigned doesn't mesh with who I am. And that terrifies people, right? That yeah. terrifies pastors,
even
that terrifies
more basically, oh, I see a trans person and they're not evil. And though I'm not trans, I should not treat trans people evil.
Right.
Wickedly, you know.
Yes, because I'm not trans. I'm a cisgendered woman, and I'm reading this book, and I feel so connected to it, and which is why the book is so powerful, right? Like, you don't have to be, like, I don't see myself in the depictions in the cinema or parts, but I'll see myself in the black stories and the black experience of Travelle growing up in the South and things like that, and I think that's just so important to be like, how long is this depiction holding me and showing me what's possible? And I think that's just something to always be mindful of when we're following people. And
you're also watching movies a little bit more carefully now.
Oh, of course.
Because when you yes. read about movies, you're like, oh my gosh, all this stuff that was able to be extracted from watching this.
And it makes me think about what you like to watch and what about what you love to watch holds you and holds that depiction of yourself.
Yeah. I love talking about movies. I think a lot of people just watch a movie and they move on to the next movie because it's so easy with the world of streaming, Netflix, Amazon, all of this, that we don't sit down and talk about the movie. Like, recently this week, we went to go see, you know, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Yes,
and I was like,
did.
I want to sit down and drink a beer and discuss this. And that's, you know, what we did. We broke it down. And I love that. Like, we need to be talking about the things we consume and not be passive consumers.
It also makes me think about going back to last week's conversation about when we're just hate watching someone because they're a train wreck. Now I'm asking myself, like,
what
not
does
that hate
say
watching.
About me?
Yeah, yeah. What actually, you know, I was talking about, like, I follow Andrew Caldwell and I hate that he says he's not gay no more, he's delivered, but this is funny. This is a train wreck. I can't look away. So
why?
I'm kind of like, what about this depiction is holding me?
Yeah,
like, what do I see in myself that is this is
self-reflection.
Yeah.
I love it. Man, I think we can end the show on that.
I think we can too.
Self-reflection, y'all. Like,
and what? I'm completely, like, bastardizing the purest, like, most incredible words that Travelle is talking about. Like, if
also,
you actually read the book, you're going to be like, oh, Amber missed the mark with this. But that's been, like, a huge land for me.
I want to get on, you know, bastardization for a second. Bastardization is a misogynistic term, right? Because a bastard is someone without a mom, without a father. And
okay.
this idea without... that not having a father makes you less than, makes you inferior. So that term bastardization is grounded in misogyny. So, you know, food for thought.
Yes. So I am giving a watered down, not so intelligent version of Travelle's words. So.
Well, now that's elementalism. It's treating one element lesser than all the other elements. So
you see how you'd be hijacking people? What would you have me say, Ben? My words are never going to be as good as Travelle's. Please read Travelle's
book. Watered
down
was good. No, no, you did a great job explaining it. Yeah, I 100% read this book.
I say that to say, please, if you follow and support us, hopefully we're continuing to give you a depiction of our authentic lives that holds your attention, and we're happy to keep that attention for as long as you'll have us. And when we make mistakes, please say, like, I see myself making that mistake.
Yes.
Like, unzipped pants. Anyway, this has been another episode of Fly, Fly, Oh, To Be A Fly. I'm playing the whole song on the outro,
okay.
Ben.
Cool.
We love y'all so, so much. And let us know your thoughts on this episode. And we'll see y'all next week for the show. Bye, y'all.
You know they're from TikTok, because those laughs keep you coming, because they're wilding all the time. Before wild throws a tantrum. Listen to our silly anthem, cause they're wildin' all the time. Don't swap while Amber squats and does her dance to please her plants. And Ben reads books while serving looks. Wild is wildin' all the time. Fly, fly, oh, to be a fly. Fly, fly, come and be a fly on the wall. Leave.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.